I have this thing that I. Okay, sorry.
Cool.
I'll go first.
If you want to
Okay.
take the first question, Elizabeth, or.
Yeah, I want to because it's the whole thing that the what happened the other night with us when we engaged around the arc and when we went up those stairs.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so what happened, Mike? We all engaged, you know, around the arc as we, you know, we usually do and go up, you know, and we were looking for that book, right?
Okay.
Access that book. And when we engaged around the arc, we did see a book, but the book was open and the pages were fluttering. And then what we saw a canopy of angels, and then we saw one particular angel. He came, couldn't really describe. He just looked like a normal, ordinary, almost like a man, you know, normal angel. And he took the book, and he shut it like that, and he tucked it under his arm, and he walked up these stairs of fire, and he invited us to come. But what really impacted me is that he seemed like a no-nonsense, very serious angel, right?
Yeah,
and it made me cry actually because I was like, what? He just took the book, he slammed the chair, tucked it on his arm, and said like, follow me. And so I said, okay. And so there was these stairs of fire. There was no sides to the fire, to the stairs, no bottom. And when you look way to the top, there seemed to be nothing out there. So we got up on the stairs, and there's lots of stuff we saw there and so forth on the top of the stairs, the angels seemed to sort of disappear, and then this face of a lion seemed to kind of come out of the fire. So we stood there, kind of thinking what to do, and then we saw over, like way in the distance, this mountain range with one huge particular mountain, but it seemed to be in darkness, the mountains, and there was a chasm, and it seems as though we were invited to come across to that mountain. So we stood there thinking, how are we going to get across there? And then we saw this thin, almost like a thread in the natural, going across from the top of the stairs across this mountain. We didn't see the angel anymore. We felt we had a sort of zip line across there. And it was kind of dangerous, seemingly, because there is nothing there. You zip line across there of a thread, you could die. Right? So, like, okay, we're going to do this. This is in the spirit. We can't die. So we ziplined across there. When we went across to the mountain became light, and we each saw what was happening up on the mountain. Saw the angel again, but this time the book flew open. There was a lot of light, and top of the mountain looked like a crater, and we all went down into the mountain. And the whole place at the bottom there just expanded like a whole new world. And it was very light, a lot of activity, just glorious with the bustle and so forth. And if one of you guys want to take it from there, about all the things that we saw, we sensed that on the right side, there were kind of four fountains, and we felt invited to drink from that fountain. And then we saw a woman walking nearby there. And, I mean, we saw her, again, we didn't saw the top of her, just mostly her gong was amazingly beautiful, almost like liquid opals. I don't know if you could, but not in one stone, like the whole gong. And we got like, who is this? Is this wisdom? Right? And we asked the question, and we felt like she said her name is Prudence. So what I wanted, could you meet Prudence before you meet, well, we met Wisdom before, but could we meet Prudence like that? I don't know, we didn't understand it. I didn't understand that. And then we continued to just explore the place. There was this cloud that seemed like a cloud, but it seemed to be not earthly. And when you put your hand in it, lightning came from it. And down to the left side, there was this tub or a pool, and it had oil in it and different fragrances, like frankincense and myrrh and sandalwood and lavender. And we were invited to get in there and just soak, frequency. It was gloriously amazing. The ground, the floors, we sat on the top and looked at the floor, or the ground. It seemed to be like glass, but not exactly glass. Not like glass like we see it here. It's like light, like solid light, if that makes sense. But within the glass, it seems to have all these expressions and refractions of light and colors in it. And he says, "Where's Father? We could not see him, but we sensed you as somewhere there in the distance. But Jesus came, he laid his hand on each one of our shoulders, but he didn't really say anything." So it was all these things that are happening and so forth. And what happened, at least to me, and it happened to Angela, we could not sleep after that. Like at night, we couldn't sleep. For me, I was like buzzing with activity. I don't know what, but what happened? So all night it was just buzzing and alive with what took place there. Could not sleep. Just keep going back there, you know, on the stairs and so forth. So I just want to ask you. I looked at a chart to try to see where was this. Was this the throne room? Because we seem to have accessed the Ben Elohim angel. He seemed to be that the one that took the book, and there seemed to be also that canopy of angels, not the Ben Elohim, the Elohim, and we saw, on the top of the stage, there's this whirlwind with colors wrapping around it, and we wanted to know if that was the opening, and or the chaos. So I don't know if you could give us some more insight into that. That was a long-winded kind of question, information.
It's, I mean, pretty amazing encounter. In terms of how you engage these things and the symbolism of them, and what is it that God's trying to show you through it, and that's the key. Because we can get caught up with where it is or what it is, and the key is the revelation that is being released through it. And so, yeah, I mean, the whirlwinds and the stuff, they're usually the chaos. The offering are the wheels within the wheels within the wheels, so they're sort of light power sources, and they move thrones around and different things. But normally the whirlwinds and the fiery whirlwinds are the chaos. Order of the angelic. Some of what you're describing sounds like a journey or a process that is not just what you experience there, but is actually representing of what you will be experiencing on this journey. So as you're beginning to engage, you're going to go through things like purification and stepping out. You know, the symbolism of there's a zip line, hey, this is really dangerous, is, okay, yeah, there are going to be decisions you have to make and things you have to do, which are stepping out in faith, and you're going to launch out without anything beneath you, other than knowing that you've been called and this is a mandate you've been given. So the same sort of thing with the stairs of fire. It's not necessarily that is a place in the realms of heaven, but it's representing the journey that you will go on when you ascend through fire. Again, no sides to it. So you're going to be called to go to higher levels and engage in higher levels in the kingdom, but it's going to take fire and purification and refining to continue the journey. So a lot of these things are seen for me. I tune into, okay, is this a real place in the realms of heaven which you can, you know, find, or actually is God actually taking you in on a thing to show you the process that you're going to go through? And hence, you know, you see the mountains and they're in the distance. So does the fact that they're in the distance indicate that this is something that is coming rather than something's now? So it's looking at what do the symbols mean when you look at them? And, you know, the fact that it was in darkness, you know, that means that you've not brought light there yet. So it's, again, something reserved for you to bring light to actually open that up. And then when you get there, you find you get to the mountain and it actually isn't on the top of the mountain. You have to go deeper. So when you get to positions of authority and you bring light back to those places in a governmental sense, then you get to access deeper things again. And when you went into deeper, you said it felt like a whole new world.
Right.
And again, that's what's coming, a whole new world in which the things that we know now and the normalcy of things that are now current, in the future, it will be completely different. And therefore, you'll be operating in a different dimension and in different ways. And then, you know, you get four fountains. You know,
yes.
It's always about a window. And again, what are the four fountains that you're going to be drinking in terms of government, the order of Melchizedek, the four faces of God, Lion, Ox, Eagle, and then basically in one of them, you know, in the top of the things, you see a lion appear, which is, yes, an indication this is about a kingly function. So the stairs that you go up in fire is about bringing you into your kingly function of the lion, which is where the lion appeared. In terms of prudence is an angel that works closely with wisdom. And you can certainly engage prudence because, again, prudence is about how you go about something. Wisdom will show you what to do, and wisdom will direct you to governmental spheres and will take you to places, show you the protocol. But prudence is much more about how you approach something rather than just what it is you do. And they work very closely together, you know. And in prudence, the fact, you know, an opalescent or an opal type view is not clear like blue sapphires or whatever. There's a sense where you have to look deeply, more deeply into it, because it's not just a clear thing, because it's to do with about attitudes and heart and things around things, of why you do things. And, you know, prudence is not necessarily the same as being prudent.
Okay.
Being prudent is, you know, so it's, again, what does it mean? What does it mean to us? What's the revelation being revealed to us? You know, and then when you get to see the light and the different things expressed, you know, that's the manifold wisdom and the manifold grace of God. You know, they are multifaceted, multicolored, and have so many applications to them that there is impossible to get to the bottom of it, or to get, because it's just so multifaceted. There are so many facets. You know, when I've looked into the face of God and just looked into one facet, even when I looked into that, deeper into it, it was just layered and layered and layered, even in one facet. And so I think God is taking you into these encounters, really showing you some of the things. The fact that the book is open, it's fluttering, but the angel closed it and then said, come, is an indication that the timing of that isn't now. There is still something that you're going through, the process that you're following, which is going up the fiery stairs to engage in the kingship function of transformation that you need to go through for that book to be fully open. You know, and it is, those are the sort of the reasons why when we have these experiences, when we journal them and record them, and then we go back, that's where I would sit with God, you know, in my garden, or I would sit and I would basically just say, what does this mean?
Right.
Show me what the thoughts of this are from your perspective. So what does it mean that this book was open and then closed? Who was the angel that closed it? What was his purpose? Is he assigned to us? Is he one of the things that is assigned to our throne? You know, and then I would ask, okay, what's the significance of the stairs of fire?
Right.
You know, And again, you know, it's like then you see the mountain range, and to get there you have to cross a chasm which seems dangerous, which is an indication that there is time and process in this, in which you're going to have to just step out and engage some things which look pretty scary. But, you know, it's all pretty amazing.
Would that be because it was to us together? Would that mean for us as a bench, or could or and also individually, right?
Well, you are individuals, but yes. If the whole function of this was about the lion, and it's about the mountains, and it's about kingship, okay. It's about your governmental spheres. And so I would see that this is something together, that you're going to face this journey together.
Okay.
Not just I mean, of course, you are individuals, and you have to individually engage all these things, but actually the fact that you saw it together, and the fact that there was four fountains.
Yes. Again, right. So
there's four of you bringing that four faces, that pyramid, into agreement with heaven and earth. All those things, you know, just show the ongoing symbolic nature of what God is trying to reveal to and trying to show you. But then, you know, then I would, when you come back and you share it, then it's like, okay, what do we need to do?
Right.
You know, what do we then need to do? How do we then engage and open that? You know, so that really is some of how these things work. You know, and when you encounter something like that, God will take you through something to open up the realm of understanding that you need, so that you can then look to pursue it, basically.
Right. Thank you.
I just wanted to add that we also saw the seven, or you know, perceived.
Yes.
Saw the seven spirits of God there, like colors. And we perceive wisdom and the other seven spirits just all in one location there.
Yeah, and again, of course, they're all about your mandate for position and the whole thing about the positional government that you have. Yeah, that those are clues and indicators of what the encounter is about, as governmental issues, which, you know, is significant, you know, because those things, you know, when I would look at that sort of thing, and I would look down and look at the symbolism of it, and then begin to say, okay, God is, we're going to move into something new, but it's actually going to cost us to step into it, because those were the indications. Hey, we're going up a fiery stairs, we're not knowing where we're going. But we're going into another level of government, and I think that's really what this is about. You know, this is another level of government, isn't it, that you're stepping into together. But, yeah.
You know, two other things are that when...
Can you hear you?
Can you hear me, Mike?
Yep.
Okay. When we, before we started up the stairs, when the angel shut the book and went up the stairs, the fiery stairs, it was almost, there was a feeling, I don't want to put words on Norma or Elizabeth, that was there something wrong? And interesting, when we started up the stairs, and it was take us a while to go up the stairs, they were steep and the fiery, I stepped up, and there was no support for the stairs, no railing, and I remember stepping off the stairs and being in the air, and then coming back on the stairs and saying to them, it's safe, we're safe. Mm-hmm. And when we were in this strange place, different place, the fact is I saw a little girl. And what came to me was, first thought, innocence.
Yeah.
And I think that would be two parts, that we're safe with him wherever we are. And two, there's that innocence that we have to have when we go before God.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, absolutely, yeah. And I think tuning into the emotions, and again, gives you a sense of understanding about what's going on, because in everything that we do in the kingdom, when we're called to step out into something new or to launch out into something new, there's always that sense that our soul will have, is this safe? Because built into our soul is the desire for safety and security. And so there's always that feeling, is it safe? Now the reality is, it is safe from a heavenly perspective because you are in God and with God and He's guiding and leading. From an earthly perspective, it may not be safe. From a natural standpoint, is this a safe thing to do? No, sometimes the things we do are almost mad. You know, they're crazy things. But the reality is, in God they're safe. But they may not appear safe, and that's why the feelings that you get when you engage this stuff actually indicate where you are on the journey and the process. And then it actually, the fact that you stepped off and okay, I'm going to come back to the same place, you know, this appears, so it's showing you that what will appear to be dangerous in a natural perspective will be safe from a spiritual heavenly perspective. You know, and so not to allow natural fears of the unknown or can we do this or all those things that come in when we launch out into something to stop you, because those things are about how we look at the fear aspects of what if, and the whole thing of innocence. You know, we have to have faith like a little child, which means we don't do the what-ifs. We just trust that we're being taken and led and guided on this journey because it's safe. It is safe with Him. You know, so, but very interesting, you know. You have fun together, so.
Yeah. So, yeah on those stairs also, I just remembered that is what it felt like. You just talk about emotion a bit. It didn't necessarily feel unsafe, right? It felt like a new place. It felt like an unknown place, and there was this sense of trust, of being drawn into this deeper place of trust. Regardless, so because when you look to the sides, it said there was nothing at the bottom. It was like a suspension of these stairs of fire, and the sides of it were fire. So, and it, I think it's more of, because for us, I think, well, I lingered a while, you know, Angela, we lingered a while on that stairs, just observing the whole thing, and just observing and looking at the surroundings and what it felt like. And even to get to the top, it was a good way on top of it. And even the top of it, it seems like choice. Will I launch out? Will I go across that line, even though it seems like a thin thread? So it felt like if someone put you to the top of a precipice, and you look below, and you know if you jump, you could die. And so I'm being willing to take that to that step. Yeah. So then, yeah.
But if you think last time we got together, we went deeper into the Spirit and Jesus and into the Father, then yeah, once you start to engage deeper into them, you're going to likely be taken to unknown places, and the level of trust that you have to develop increases. You know, the deeper you go, the more you connect with the deeper things of God, which are unknown. And it is a journey, you know, and in this journey we're engaging things that we don't know. You know, and that's in one sense the exciting thing about the journey, is that, you know, we're going deeper and deeper with God into dimensions that we never even imagined existed. But that's part of it. You know, the destination or the end result is not always the main thing, but the what we learn and how we engage on the way prepares us. And so going, you know, if you just thought about, well, we're going to go over to the other side of this mountain, and you can do that. I mean, you could have looked at that mountain and think, oh, let's go and step over there. But that wasn't the purpose. The purpose was, actually, we need to learn that there are going to be things that we have to do and launch out without understanding and without knowing. But we trust. You know, and if the fact now that you know that you launched out and you got to the other side, which, what did it do? It took you deeper. You went down into another depth. And that's what always happens. You know, when we take a step of obedience, when we act in that innocence of childlike faith, God rewards that faith with more. You know, and as we're faithful with little, he will entrust us with greater knowledge, riches, understanding. The depths of relationship come out of the willingness to embrace that. You know, it's always been so. You know, Abraham, well, leave everything behind and go. You know, there's always been that dimension with God that he wants us to step out and trust him just because it's him.
Sorry, I talked to him early in the morning. That's probably because I had like 2 hours sleep. But I was just sharing with Bill and with Angela about this. I was just super excited. I had to share it about, I can't even remember, it was that same night. The Lord started talking to me about the scripture about losing my life and finding it again, unless you lose your life. You know, you cannot find it again. And he started showing me the different meanings, and he started to show me about one way you lose your life. I was telling Bill and Angela, I think, last night, that, you know, there's a way of losing your life when you die to your rights, you die to your own desires, you die to all of these different things, like this daily living of losing your life, giving it up all for him. And then there is this other place of losing your life. And it has to do with that whole thing of jumping up, going across that zip line and saying, I want to go deeper. And I realized that I was, for me personally, I was journeying there in that deeper place where I felt as though I was going to lose control of my faculties, of what I, the little things that I had control of. And my soul actually reacted to that, like, This seems to be a place of such unknowing, like, never know this, what is this about, never been there, never experienced it, never thought about it, doesn't know what this place is like. I felt myself actually being, like, suctioned into another place, drawn into a deeper place. And if this hasn't to do with the stairs and so forth, no, this is just my daily life. This is what was happening. And I could feel the God, I don't know, this seems like this is a place like I'm afraid. It didn't feel unsafe. It felt like, what would this take? So this is another place of dying, you know, of being willing to lose it all. Not just your, I'm giving up my rights, I'm dying to my dreams. If this other place of depth in him or deeper in his heart. And I, you know, and I find that, so I drew back, to tell the truth. I drew back, and so he has been really journeying with me personally on that, about, you know, deeper into his heart and where he wants to go with us. Yeah.
Okay,
well, shut up now.
If you think about, there's a difference between dying to self or denying self, which is denying the old way of doing things, to surrendering to a new way. So the denial or the dying is about dealing with the old. Surrender, being out of control, is about surrendering to a new place. And that's the key. You know, and there are different. Because you can deny the old, but not step into the new. And you can deny yourself and, well, I don't want my choices and I want to surrender, but actually you then have to surrender to that new way of doing it. And that new way may be completely alien to us. It may be that we have to give up the control of doing it our way in it. And it is there are multi levels of understanding to losing life and gaining life. And each time you do it, you go deeper. You know, whereas each time you do other things, you go higher. And there's just different ways in which everything is a progression. And there are tests and steps on those progressions where we get the opportunity of being tested, because we get offered something and then it's a choice, well, are we going to accept that offer? If we don't accept it the first time, we just go round the mountain and come back and he then offers it again. But it's better to take it the first time, because then you get to get there quicker. But we have to face the reality that they're real issues. You know, they're real choices that we have to make. It's not like, oh, great, yeah, I'll make every choice for God. That's why the tests get, in a sense, harder. It's the same thing in life. You know, you get, in our education system, we have SAT tests at like 6 and then 8 or then 11, you know. But then when you get older, you get to university, the tests and the exams and everything get harder, because they're with a greater level of understanding and depth. You know, and the more we know about God, in one sense, it's like the more we realize we don't know about him. Because we realize that we go deeper, and it's just deeper and deeper still. You know, and that's a, in a sense, there is no way that you'll get to the point where, hey, we know this is easy now. Because it's always going to be a choice to go that next step, that deeper level, that higher level, whatever, whichever it is. And it all does come down to the two aspects. When you look at the gateways of your spirit, soul, and body, the two key gateways are worship, which is obedience, not singing worship songs. It's about obeisance, which is I acknowledge that he is my Lord, he is my King, he is my Father, and I'm going to submit and surrender and bow down to him and come into complete agreement with him. And then when that engages our soul, we have choice. And every time we engage in worship in our spirit and we say yes to God in our spirit, our soul has to come into agreement and choose. So if our spirit directs the soul, then the soul will choose. If there are still areas of fear, unbelief, doubt operating in our soul, then our soul can block the choice that our spirit has made. Because our spirit will say, yes, I want to go deeper. I want to surrender. And if that choice gate is not purified and refined, that gate can say, yeah, but it's unsafe. It's dangerous. I don't know where we're going. It's like we're not going there, you know. And so those are the two main key gates. All the other gates really function, but those two gates are the key ones for actually moving forward. Because we have to choose ultimately, you know, and that is the way in which God has joined us into his government. He's given us the right to choose to bring government with him. So it's good, you know, good things that God's giving revelation of, definitely.
Mike, I have a question on DNA.
Yep.
For years now, one weekend in May every year, I'd be going up north with five other gentlemen. And one of the gentlemen that I go up with, is a professor of ophthalmology at the local University of Toronto. Yeah. So I started to talk to him about DNA, and it was in May that we were up, and all the changes that were going to happen as a result of the Human Genome Project. And he said, no, it's not that simple. It's also the protein base we're finding.
Yeah.
He talked about that for a while. Anyway, this last week, I was with Debbie. I was talking to a gentleman that did a PhD in genetics. He was also a medical doctor. So I started to talk to him about DNA, and he brought up the same. And I gained all the changes, and he came back. He went same place, direction. He said, it's the protein base within it.
Yeah.
He said, you can do whatever you want, because I said all the changes with DNA, with what they can do, engineering. He said, no, it's the protein base. We don't really understand. But he said, think of it this way. He said, your DNA is the hardware. Your protein base is the software.
Yeah.
Unless the protein base is reprogrammed, it operates the DNA, you're not getting anywhere.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking in our prayers, when we're asking him to change the DNA, it also has to reprogram our protein base, which is the trigger, which operates the triggers within the DNA, and probably why it's not all being used, or why the wrong things are being triggered.
Yeah.
So in our prayers, probably, and I'm just throwing this out, I don't know, that it really seems to me that in our, and when we're doing communion, besides saying, change my DNA into your image, I want them also to, can you reprogram my protein base to operate in alignment with your government, my DNA?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Because if you think of DNA, is obviously made up of proteins, and you have the four protein bases, you know, G, U, T, or C, or whatever it is. I remember them back from my biology days, whatever. And they all form together to form the different connections that can be made. You know, you go look into the protein base, then what makes up the protein base? You know, it goes to, in a sense, the core issues are the vibrating strings of the energy of God, which are within the very core of everything. So the theory of everything states that everything is made of vibrating strings, which are the vibration of God's voice. So the thing he spoke about you is vibrating at the very base level of in the smallest particles that exist within you. And that is what needs to bring realignment. As we resonate with that, it begins to change and resequence everything back into original condition and order. And that's the grace of God. Now, that's what God told me when I first had a encounter in heaven with all these quantum things. He said that actually the strings of vibrating energy is my voice, and that is my grace, the divine potential energy of God to bring his purposes to bear in every situation. And that is in us, in everything, in the space between everything, if you like, is that vibrational energy. That's what's connected to the quantum realm or the spiritual realm. That is what we get our supply from. Now, if that is the voice of God vibrating, when we begin to engage deeper with God, particularly on places like the dance floor, you get the light of God, which starts to come around. And our DNA, the third strand of DNA that gets... in a sense, when we get born again, the light strand that comes back, that is the key to transforming the rest of our DNA. It's the encoding of the light, the information which is encoded within in light is a key, so that light and sound work together to bring this thing. Now, when the Russians did their research on DNA and they looked at the 97% of junk DNA, they discovered that there was language and syntax within the DNA encoding. And so the coding of the protein bases and where all those triggers and switches are is in that area. And they discovered that by sending words modulated on a light laser beam light, they were able to resequence the DNA. And so light and sound are key factors in getting our DNA resequenced. And so when we take a communion, it's as much with the vibrating words that we speak, the frequency of the words that we speak in agreement with God's thoughts about us, that brings that transformation. See, we can take communion and we can take a piece of bread and we can take some juice and we can do it, but actually what are we saying, what are we speaking that agrees with the light record of God that brings agreement and brings transformation? And so, yeah, whether you say, yeah, I'm going to speak into my protein bases, it's really speaking at the deepest level to resequence and re-encode everything according to the light that God has created us in. And so, you know, he is light. So when we get on the dance floor and the nine strands of his DNA, which are all strands of light encoding, then our light strand begins to absorb that revelation, and then that is supposed to then transform our natural DNA, the two strands of DNA, according to the revelation that comes in light. Now, when we agree with it, and when we speak into it, then we begin to see greater transformation. You know, I mean, it sounds quite complicated, but in reality, you're looking for your spirit to engage with the light of God, the thoughts of God about us, and then we want to agree with those thoughts and speak those thoughts to transform our natural DNA back into created order that it was created for in eternity. You know, and that's the key. And they've obviously found epigenetically that there can be changes in that very base encoding in one generation through trauma or repetitive issues. You know, so a person can become an alcoholic and pass that alcoholic trigger to the next generation. So there's a lot in it, you know. I mean, you know, I think for those who like the technical side of it, then you can look into that and get an understanding of it. But for those who aren't really keen on that, the revelations, you just need to get the revelation of what's going on, which means at the deepest level, we want everything re-encoded back to its original light information, if you like, about the thoughts of God. Because if you think of the thoughts of God, when you go back into the heart of God, everything is like flashes of light that are flashing like synapses and neurons flashing with thought. And so God's thoughts are light. But when he thought, he then said. So there's a great power in agreement between the information that we receive as thoughts, which are encoded within light, and speaking to align and resonate with that vibration. And of course, we have power in our voice. Just as God's voice has power to hold everything together, our voice has power when we speak, which is why we've got to be very careful what we say, you know. And so it isn't enough just to go and take a bit of bread and a bit of wine. The words that we speak are important, you know, and it's a pretty fascinating subject. You know, I quite find it very interesting, but I know some people are like, just tell me how to do it, you know, and I think the more we connect up with the firestones of God, again, there are nine firestones, are connected with the nine strands of DNA. They contain revelation, and our spirit absorbs it, and that's the key. Our spirit absorbs the revelation when we get encoded with the DNA of God and the stones. That our spirit gets the revelation in light. And it's then a matter of that being released from our spirit into a transformational energy within our soul, really. But I mean, it's interesting stuff. And it's great that you get a chance to talk to people like that, because they just they open up, you know, another understanding of it for you, you know.
And when I look at this too, it's like almost taking the tools that the faith movement with Kenneth Hagin gave us, and it's taking it. It's you're asking God, and then you're speaking, and you're telling your spirit to do this. You're telling your spirit to come into alignment, your gates or whatever, your soul to come into alignment. You're asking God to do it, and then you're telling your, as I understand, your the parts of your spirit, the parts of your soul, to come into alignment, to absorb it, take it on, to resonate in.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, God has released this sort of revelation over many generations. Unfortunately, what I find is that the people who get the revelation never developed it fully. And some did. I think there's a really good, interesting little book called Quantum Faith by Charles Capps' daughter, I think, that begins to take it to that next level and took what the whole faith movement was. But if you go back, I would say the majority of people in that faith movement did not actually get what they said, because it was limited to, hey, this is all going to make you better, rather than this is going to bring you into a new level of governmental authority. And that was the risk, I think, in that. Now, they didn't then take it to its conclusion about what we could when we had creative power in our words. What are we supposed to do? Not just create another aeroplane or a whole load of money, but actually to begin to change and transform the earth back into its original condition. Now, I think part of the problem is most of the faith movement had a very old version of eschatology. So their view was still very much, yeah, this is going to give us a better life here, but actually we're still going to be rescued. And therefore they weren't looking for us to bring transformation and restoration to answer the groan of creation and bring the whole creation back into as it was in heaven on earth. And so they were just looking for a better earth, rather than a transformed earth out of a governmental authority to begin to speak creatively and to begin to reorder creation back to its original purpose. You know, because I think they got earthbound with it. You know, and some of them were very good at the earthbound side of things, and they were very effective in it, but they stopped short of what it really meant. You know, what it really meant to have the power in our creative speech, not just to make it better for us, but to actually make it transformed and restored and renewed. But the principles that they learned were correct. You know, they just weren't fully formed into a governmental understanding. I think so, yeah.
Awesome. Angela, you're very quiet. Are you awake?
I do have a question. I noticed that every time we go up, you know, just in different places, it seems to me that we're taken somewhere. Like there's almost like a sovereign, okay, today you're going here. Yeah. And we've never, like, we almost immediately when we purpose in our heart to go up together, you know, we're introduced to a certain scenario. We've actually never gone back together except for once. and that was kind of different. We've never actually gone back together in one of our experiences. And I'm wondering, like, you know, how we go about doing that, because each time, or is it important to go back together in one of those encounters? Because every time we purpose to go, we're sort of escorted, or something presents itself. How would you tell
yeah,
that?
Okay. Well, if that's what happens, then you've got to accept that that's what God's doing right now. He's still unveiling revelation of the journey and the different aspects that he wants you to grasp. I very rarely have that happen to me now, because I'm functioning in governmental authority, so my key places are to go around the ark, and I'm focused on what is a mandate for today, what is I want to resonate with the will of God for today. I want to step into him and begin to look at things from his perspective. So the whole function of that is governmental for me. And so I'm treading the pathway, and I'm going to rule because I'm operating in that level of authority. You are beginning to, you're called to operate in that level of authority, but you're still learning. And I guess there's still things God wants to show you. But if you choose, I mean, in a sense, this is where, if you choose to engage, like, okay, by faith, so we are believing that we're going to now engage directly in this place. So we're not just going and seeing what happens. We're going with a specific direction. We're going to get a mandate for our mountain, or we're going to get this, then see what happens when you try that. Rather than, well, let's step in and see, no, let's step in and go. So you're going deliberately to engage in rulership. So we're going together to get a mandate, or actually we're going to open that book today. So we're going to go to our mountain together, and we're going to call the angel to bring the book before us, and we're going to open it at the page that we need to see the season we're in, or whatever it is that God's saying. Try actually being proactive in applying government, because I think you're still probably exploring, or have an explorer's mentality, rather than, hey, we know these places, but we can go back to them because they are accessible to us. But then that's really what happens, you know. You have to start taking responsibility for the governmental spheres. That means, okay, that's what we're going to do. So you have to determine that you're going to do that, and then by faith step into that, and then look to engage that as a specific thing, you know, which is different from stepping in and just let's see where we go today, you know, because there's so many places that you can go today, and if that's the desire of your heart, that's what will happen. If you see what I mean, if your desire is, well, we're going to step in and see where God takes us, or see where we're going to go, then that's likely to happen, because your desire will determine that. If you go in with the desire is, we're going to govern today, so we're going to get a mandate to govern, or we're going to establish where the blueprint is, or whatever it might be, then that's likely to happen. So, you know, you need to decide together when you do step in, the function of your purpose of stepping in, and you need to be at one with that and agree that before you go. If that does that make sense? Okay.
Yes, it does. Thank you, Mike.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, we seem to have gone an hour without But it seems to be a good hour. It's a very good hour.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, but when we come off air, we just like to say something off air, Mike, if that's okay.
That's fine, yeah, no problem.
Oh, Mike, we met when we were up the previous time before that, for the Mountain of the Ecclesia.
Yeah.
With the, when we were up north, when we were together and the 12 Cloud of Witnesses that came around us.
Yeah.
We met the first one from the Cloud of Witness.
Excellent.
And it was one of the ones that was evolved back in the 1760s in the foundation of the country.
Yes.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. We did actually do some of that. So Angela, we think we have forgetting girl some of the things that we did actually intentionally access and go. but that's true. Bill, we stepped in and we encountered one of those flood of witnesses that really went back. That was pretty epic that time. We forgot about that. Thank you, Bill, for reminding us of that. But we have it written down, of course. Yes.
Sure. Okay, good.
So we did. Yeah.
All right.